Hello, listeners, and welcome to a long-awaited episode of A Tale of Two Game Devs, a podcast about two friends who aren't video game industry veterans.
But want to be.
Now, that voice you just heard was that of my long-forgotten friend, Milo.
And that other lovely voice is not one I've heard for about a month now. My dear friend, Michaela.
Yeah, so when I was thinking of adjectives before the show, like I was telling you, Milo, when we weren't recording yet, I was very much struggling with which ones to use because I was thinking, ooh, forgotten friend, that sounds good and it works. And then I was like, wait, no, I didn't forget Milo. I just haven't talked to him in a while.
I'm like over in the wilds of Redmond, just lost right. And alone.
The inaccessible wildlands.
Yeah.
Tom yeah, Clancy's so I, The Wildlands, except it's just Milo, lost right. In the state of Washington.
So, of course, it's been ages since we've chatted, and we've just had one thing after the other happening on weekends due to us forgetting or due to GDC, my gosh, that would just have not been able to get you guys a podcast. That, of course, has now changed.
Yeah, and I guess, to be honest, I probably should have at least tweeted about it, but also we have like 3 Twitter followers and we get more podcast listeners than that. So I don't know if any of you actually follow the Twitter, but oh well.
You're certainly welcome to if you'd like to. No pressure.
Yeah. All right, Milo. Well, I want to hear what you've been up to first, because it sounds like you have some idea what you're going to talk about and I don't. So let's hear it.
I was telling Michaela before we started that I took notes. I often take notes about what I'm doing. Otherwise, I just don't remember what's been going on in my life. However, I've taken notes after the fact, so I'm still struggling with the same, like, what have I done for the last month? I'm also, I mean, so much of my time is just spent at DigiPen working that is like, what'd you do this week? Well, I worked really late on projects and I let my hands heal. That's about it. But there are a couple things that happened, and I'll touch base on those. I'm going to start with my own personal health, my hands. Still working on tendonitis. My hands still feel like crap. I can't really do much with them, and my left hand has started hurting some. Not nearly as bad as my right hand. However, there is a sliver of hope, because I went to a chiropractor the other day. I've also been having some mid-back pain from like a series of weightlifting injuries that I just hadn't gotten taken care of. I should have gotten taken care of earlier, but I didn't. Here I am now going to a chiropractor.
Just don't exercise is the solution.
Yeah. Right. Turn into a
I'm
potato.
I'm doing it.
Yeah. That's excellent. I'll follow your lead.
Good.
But I went to the chiropractor and I was telling him, of course, I'm dealing with tendonitis. It hasn't been healing as fast as I would have expected. I'm dealing with mid-back issues. And he's like, I think these things are connected. And so he does like a full physical on me. And it's just amazing to watch him. Yeah, he's a very, very, very skilled chiropractor. Like, I've been to a couple of chiropractors, but just watching this guy work is like watching an artist work. The way that he could read my body and see things, and he just like touch parts of my body and be like, oh yeah, no, that's not good. And he'd be able to like tell how far he could push my body too. He's like, no, your body doesn't want me to do that. It's just amazing. It's literally like watching an artist in high gear. Really, really incredible stuff.
Wow.
But he draws all these red marks on a diagram of my body as he's going through this exam. And it's like, I've got this gigantic cross section across my back. I've got marks all up and down my shoulders and my arms. And it's like, oh, yeah, that would explain a lot, wouldn't it?
I mean, X marks the spot, so you better get digging, right?
Right. And when there's like 30 spots, I mean, you really you need a lot of shovels.
Yeah.
But I went to him and I had my first adjustment, and it was amazing. It was like immediately I had more mobility in my wrists. My pain decreased. It was like the first shift I'd had in 3 months. I was like, whoa, I actually feel better. This is wacky. And I would like pick up eggs out of the fridge. And for people who don't have tendonitis, you're like, what? Picking up eggs? So what? It's like, I just don't use my right hand. It's too hard. And like, if you're picking up 2 eggs, that puts your hand in a really weird position. But I just did it without thinking. And I looked at it like, I feel better. So that's good. And it's coming along. It's still going to take time to heal, of course. I did have a setback after that, though, when I stayed up till 6 a.m. working on my game. I'm never doing that again. My arms burned for 2 days afterwards.
Oh, geez. Wow.
Yeah. And that's even with like with breaks in between. Like I'll work for an hour and then break for 5 minutes, then work for an hour. But at the combination of staying up till 6 a.m., only getting 4 hours of sleep, and my standing desk doesn't have very good arm support, so my arms tire. It's just like that combination just destroys me. So I've set up a sitting desk, which will be better while I'm recovering. I'll go see him again and tell him what happened. But yeah, so that's unfortunate because that feels like it set me back, and I have had near constant pain for the past couple days.
Jeez, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So have you been able to like do anything like work-wise with your arms, or do you just have to let it rest?
So I've found that I can do about 4 hours of computer work a day comfortably. And what I've realized this means is that I'm not going to be able to make a quality game right now. The amount of time I need to put into Rainbow Bobo to make it really shine is not physically capable for me unless I want to keep hurting myself. So what I'm going to do is do my best to meet the bare minimum for the class, just like pass and turn in a mediocre game. And then over the summer, if I've recovered, I'll go and put on those final touches that I know I need to do to make it awesome.
Does your school have any kind of like disability accommodations or anything? Like, could they extend a due date for you?
Yeah. Yes, they do. I haven't talked to them. From what little I've heard, it takes a few weeks to get set up. We're going to be done with school in a few weeks, and also our grading process.
Yeah.
It didn't occur to me until like a week ago to even consider that. And so of course it's like, it's a little too late, but yeah, I thank you for the suggestion.
I mean, I don't know. Like if I were you, I would say it's at least worth trying to talk to them and being like, hey, is there any chance? Cause I don't know. I mean, it might be better than what you've heard. They might be able to do something else that, or they
possible.
Might be able to just make a special arrangement because it kind of is a special situation.
Yeah. I could also talk to my professors, like following that idea, if they can't do anything. So I'll give that a try. Thank you.
Yeah. No, I totally recommend that. I think like if I was a professor, I'd say you have a compelling story. I wouldn't want my students to literally physically break themselves to turn in something good. But
yeah. what else? Oh yeah. So of course we also had spring break, and that was really lovely because, one, I could limit the amount of computer time that I was working. So my hands felt much better, but two, I got to hang out with my brother a bunch, and it's been so long since I've gotten to see him. I love his face. We watched a lot of anime, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, for those who are interested.
How far are you into JoJo's now?
I just finished seasons 1 and 2 and started season 3. And for those who are not well acquainted, that's actually kind of like 4 seasons, even though it's technically 2.
Yeah, I've been explained to this by my weeb friends before.
Yeah, it's all over the place. It's so funny when Julian is my brother and I are chatting about it, and he'll tell me things about one particular season. I'm like, I don't know what seasons mean. Are you talking about parts? Are you talking about seasons? Are you talking about a specific JoJo? What just tell me which JoJo we're talking about, and then I'll follow.
Tell me his name.
Yeah. But, and of course now the names have, it's like there's like Jotaro and Josuke and Joseph and Jonathan. It's like okay, now I'm even starting to lose track of that. It's a mess. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that is kind of the point. But also, I'm assuming it's probably safe to move anime thoughts into life for now, if there are any, given that I'm sure we've played enough video games over the last month odd since we've recorded.
Yes, I've actually spent more time watching games than I have playing them, just because playing them hurts. So I've still got thoughts from watching them, and a little bit on Tetris 99, which we'll touch on later.
Yeah. Right before the podcast, me and Milo almost got way too detailed talking about our Tetris 99 experiences because it sounds like we're both playing an awful lot of that one lately.
Finally, the last thing I want to to leave off on with my catch up side here is that my brother and I managed to get, we ate out 4 times during the week because special occasion, I suppose. I'm in town, and we managed to convince my mother to get us wings 4 times for that week. So we went and got like hot chicken wings. So good. That's pretty much my month. The rest has just been lots and lots and lots of work.
Ah, well, then I'm sure there will be more to talk about in the next section.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
How about you? I haven't heard about you, and I want to hear about GDC. My gosh.
Right. So, oh my gosh, for some reason I've got an extra large amount of gunk in my throat. Maybe I'm finally coming down with that GDC flu. Everybody says that you always get sick like after GDC just because all of the people you come into contact with, but I haven't gotten sick yet. I don't know. Maybe now I'm due for a reckoning. I don't know. But
I wish your health good. Well,
yeah, I wish it good too. But I'm not totally sure how to structure my week given Game Developers Conference has developer in the name and our next section is developer thoughts. But right. I think I'm going to talk about GDC in here since it's had a very big impact on my life holistically, more than just as a dev thing. And I kind of want to talk about all of that. GDC was, in a word, amazing. Like,
yeah.
Like, I have been telling my friends that was legitimately one of the best weeks I've ever had in my life. Like that good, like kind of life changing good, but I've kind of got some special circumstances here that I'll get into. I guess first of all, for the listeners, like obviously, you know, because it came out on the podcast, but I'm a trans woman. And most of the time in my life, at least for now, that's going to change in the near future. But for now, I am not out to most people, as in like I am presenting male still in, you know, most of the time, as in like at school, you know, I still go by my old name. I still use male pronouns. I, you know, talk with the old voice y'all remember from earlier in the podcast, and, you know, dress in men's clothes. And that's because, I mean, at the start of the semester, I wasn't ready. And at this point, like, my plan was to wait until next semester to kind of get a clean slate with new professors and new students that I'm TAing and then switch over. Just because I think that'll be easier for me that way. But, you know, when I'm not like at home with my housemates, I am not getting to live the way I want to live. And so I decided long ago when I was applying for GDC scholarships, like back in December, that if I got to go to GDC, I was going to present female. And I was like, yeah, you know, this is no big deal. Like I'm not going to get a scholarship anyway. So it's no big deal. I don't have to worry about it. So I did get a scholarship, as you know. Yeah. I made it into Glitch's power leveling program where they get you free tickets. And then I was like, okay, well, I decided I was going to do this. I'm like, I'm certainly not going to chicken out. And then like every time I thought like maybe I should just chicken out, I was like, the idea of meeting so many amazing new people in an industry I care deeply about while presenting as the wrong gender, I was like, that's way too repelling to me. Like, I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. I can't imagine that would be nearly as good for me in a lot of ways. So I was going to really do it. And going into GDC, I was incredibly nervous. That's like even an understatement a bit. Like I almost got to the point several times where I was just like, I should just cancel. Like I should just cancel my flight. You know, cancel my, my Airbnb reservation and tell Glitch that like, I'm not going to be able to make it. Sorry. And I don't know. It was a lot of stress because largely because, like I said, I'm not really used to presenting female, especially in public. Like the first time I ever presented female in public was, I think, 2 days before I flew to San Francisco. So I was very much not as prepared as I wanted to be. And also, of course, I was holding myself to these incredibly high standards of how like how feminine and just pretty I wanted to look. And of course, like we can get into this all day about like how, you know, like a lot of this is probably like somewhat influenced by just, you know, normative beauty standards in general and the destructive impact those have on many people's lives. And, but I don't know, like I really, really wanted that. And I, as Milo knows, like rarely do I stop at good enough in many aspects of my life. And so I just really wanted to look my best, feel my best, like present as exactly who I wanted to be, like have a full wardrobe, have makeup figured out, like have everything figured out and go out as, you know, the version of me I have wanted to be for a very long time and just meet new people as that. And, you know, as you can kind of tell, I didn't end up canceling. I ended up actually going and, and I was presenting female the whole time. Like nobody there knew me as anyone other than Michaela. Nobody there ever saw me wearing men's clothes. And like, I just, that alone was a transformative experience. Mm-hmm. I guess I made this whole long Twitter thread about it. I doubt any of you follow me on Twitter because I've now got like a smaller account that's branched off from my old account that still uses my old name and stuff because, you know, I'm not out in all aspects of my life. But yeah, I made this whole long thread about it. And I think the way I put it is I feel like throughout my life, I have always been underneath sort of some level of artificiality, as in like I'm just scared of like what's underneath and that people aren't going to like it. And a lot of that is due to just formative experiences of, you know, trying to be genuine with people and being met with, I don't know, just a lot of distaste from people, like for, you know, who I like felt I was. And so feeling like I need to cover myself up, I need to be somebody else, I need to put some kind of layer that's partially protective of my own ego and partially just because I think it's what other people want to see. And so I feel like I maybe for like the first time ever, I just like completely took off the mask. Like I didn't even pack it in my luggage. I was completely presenting as exactly who I feel I am on a deep level. And I was acting like it. I was talking to people like it. And I was, to be honest, like astounded. I met so many wonderful people. So many people were so friendly, like, and nice to me, like, and just, and it was just great. Like I met a bunch of friends. I got to meet a bunch of game devs who work on things that like I admire. And a lot of them just not only were nice to me, but were like seemed to legitimately really like me. And like that is, I guess like for me, for somebody who's used to not feeling like I am ever in any aspect of my life safe enough to like expose enough of my people, of myself to people to see if they really like me, that was legitimately transformative. Mm. And so, yeah. So for some reasons I obviously don't have everything to do with game dev, my GDC was legitimately one of the best weeks of my life.
Right, right. If GDC were a movie, it would have had excellent subtext for you.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, in a lot of cases, it was just the text. Like, oh my God, I was like legitimately like kind of just bawling Thursday night, like in my Airbnb, like at the end of GDC, because I was leaving the next day, not because I was sad, but because I was like so happy. It was like, oh my God, this went so well. This is better than anything I could have imagined. And I just feel, I just feel wonderfully myself. And I feel like it's like I exposed my soul to the universe and then the universe gave it a hug. And I just was not expecting anything nearly that nice, but.
Oh, that's amazing. And what a wonderful way to put it. I exposed myself to the universe and the universe gave me a hug.
And then aside from that, like just some of what I actually did at GDC, maybe I should talk about that too, because I'm sure that's of interest to people. So a lot of what my goal was at GDC was to just try to meet people who have like, who are the kind of people that like, yeah, I would love to work with you someday. Or at the very least, like I would love to learn whatever knowledge you would like to pass on to me. And so my method of doing that largely revolved around, you know, at some advice from my mentor, Aubrey, I was basically just reaching out to people, like game devs on Twitter who worked on things that I really appreciate. And like almost all of them, like all but one, like responded. And that was super cool. And I met up with all of them who responded. And so that included the producer of Florence, the lead programmer on Subnautica, a design lead at Bungie, and also a woman named Elizabeth Mailer, who made a game called A Normal Lost Phone, who I saw her through a GDC talk, and I was like, oh, like it was about social impact games. And I was like, that's exactly the kind of stuff I'm interested in. I want to talk to her. And so I think I hope I'm not forgetting anybody. Anybody who I at least planned to intentionally meet up with. There were a lot of like ad lib, like ad hoc meetups there in the interim. And yeah, like meeting with all of them was like really great. And like I even got to like meet more people through these people. Like at one point, like I had a short conversation over coffee with the producer of Florence, Camina Vincent. And, she was like, yeah, like, I know this is really short. If you have time somewhere later in GDC, we can meet again. So we met for dinner on Thursday night, which is like, you know, the last day that most people are at GDC, because a lot of them will leave on Friday, even though technically the conference is still ongoing. So I met with her for dinner and she was like, oh, a friend of mine will be coming at some point. And so I assumed I would have to leave. And then her friend showed up and it turns out he's the producer at Studio MDHR. So the Cuphead studio. And so I was, and so like, and, but you know, I just hung around and joined the conversation. And we just had this awesome conversation about like linguistics, the logistics of remote work because their studio is entirely remote. And a lot of politics and all sorts of interesting stuff. And so they are just super great people to talk to. And then both of them, you know, seem to legitimately really like me too. Like in the Cuphead guy even said, like, I really want to follow what you're making, like forward. So I would love to like keep in touch and see where you go.
Fun.
And I'm just like, that's really affirming for me being like, you know, a little baby dev, a student going around talking to all these adults with real jobs. But and like my conversation with the Subnautica lead programmer, Jonas Botel, like I learned a lot about like his philosophy about like learning and sort of like leaning into your passions in general. It was very, I feel like, informative, and I'm still trying to figure out how necessarily I can apply it, because one thing that I think was really cool that he told me at the end of the talk, after I was like, thank you, I feel like I learned a lot from this and this is really helpful, is that he said, okay, so I have one thing I want you to do for me now. And I'm like, okay. He's like, I want you to pass this on. Like, I want you to find some way to take what you've learned and pass it on to other people. And I was just like, okay. And he was like, it could be as simple as like writing a blog post, but I want you to do something to pay it forward. And so like, this has gotten me thinking about like, sort of, I feel like a complaint I have in general about like the game development scene in Minneapolis is that it doesn't feel like there's much of an on-ramp, you know? Like there's not really a way to get into it unless you like sort of claw your way into it by just making stuff against the odds without help, you know? And so especially for like, you know, kids and students at the U of M or students, you know, even younger than that, like they don't, I feel like they don't, like a lot of people like want to make games, but they don't really know how and they don't have anybody helping them learn how. And so I feel like kind of this idea that's not at all fully formed that I would like to see what I can do more with is just to do some kind of like outreach programs, you know, to like sort of like teach people like, hey, this is like, let's make a game. This is how you can make a game. Like, here are some resources you can use. Here's where you can take it further. Here's like all the glitch stuff that's happening locally. If you want to like meet other people who make games and who can help you and stuff like that, it's just try to like make people aware, because I know people are passionate about games. I've talked to so many of them, but so many of them I've talked to like aren't making games largely because they don't know how. And just, yeah. So I don't know. I would love to sort of help teach people how to make that a reality and where like the resources are that can help them beyond even what I can give them. So this is just sort of like baby thought that's like bouncing around in my head. And I'm meeting up with one of the lead people, Nick Van Meerten at Glitch, next week to sort of talk to him about it and see if there's anything that like Glitch might be interested in doing to help me. And also I know that they're incredibly busy people with a lot of stuff on their plate already. So I'm not super hopeful about my chances just because they're probably going to be like, wow, this is cool, but we do not have time. And I'll be like, okay, that makes my life a little bit harder, but I'll do my best. But
right.
I definitely would love to start some kind of something to, you know, kind of help people learn this stuff that they're so passionate about, but that they just don't know where to start. But yeah,
I can't wait to see where it goes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, fingers crossed. This is just, at this point, it's still a pipe dream that arose out of a cool GDC conversation. But I think a lot of things start out of that in this industry. But
Yeah. Wow, how cool that you got to meet these people that you care about and be to let yourself go into what you are. That's really amazing.
Yeah. No, it, like I said, it felt really amazing, like to the point where I was just happy bawling on Thursday night.
Right. But the gift of not pretending.
Yeah. Oh boy. But, and so I guess the next big important thing that happened in my life is that, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. So I said, like, there's a lot of my life that I'm not out in, and that has, until very recently, included most of my family. And I had kind of thought, like, okay, I'll come out to my dad and stepmom soon, and then once that's done, the entire family will know, and whenever I go back to Illinois from here on, it's as Michaela. Like, I'll be presenting female, but, like, I need to, you know, come out to them first. And Lord, I had no idea how it was going to go. Like, I thought it might be quite bad, like, to be quite frank, because of most of my family's political views. I didn't think they would be very accepting of me because, unfortunately, trans people are political by their very existence due to, you know, how the Republican Party treats them. But, and so I was super worried. And so I decided after GDC, like, okay, this is out of the way. And that was like a big stress in my life that I wanted to get out of the way before I came out to anybody else in my family. And so I was like, okay, I'm doing it next weekend. And so literally yesterday, I just came out to my dad and told him, yeah, like now that I'm out to you, you were the bottleneck I was worried about. Like, go tell everybody in the family. And it went incredibly well. Like, and I was just like kind of dumbfounded. It went better than I expected it was possible that it could have went. Like, I thought at best it was going to be awkward. Like it was going to be a lot of silence and maybe he'd say one of those, well, you'll always be my son. And like, I was so prepared to say like, you know, like if that's how you're going to see me, like I'm not going to spend time with you unless you acknowledge me for who I am. And who I, you know, have decided I am, not somebody else. But none of that even had to happen. He was actually like very, very accepting of me. And it was interesting. He even like acknowledged like his political views at one point. He was like, yeah, I'm sure you're aware my views are more traditional. And I was like, he said, but I don't think this is in conflict with any of that. This is, he called it a medical thing. And like, to be frank, it definitely is a medical thing. It's also a social thing, an emotional thing, and like embodiment and identity thing. It's a lot of different things. But like, if as long as like he's cool with it, I'm fine if he thinks this is just a medical thing, you know? But and yeah, and so it went really well. And you know, we even like joked about it here and there. And you know, my dad is the kind of guy who likes to tell jokes about like everything. And he's like, you know, I'm going to have to come up with some jokes for you, right? And I'm just like, part of me is a little bit worried that the jokes are going to be mean-spirited. And part of me is like, okay, well, I'm interested to hear. And so I told him, well, you know what? You can only tell good jokes about trans people if you understand trans people. So you better do your research. So we'll see if he does. But yeah, so that happened yesterday, and yeah, I don't know, like a lot of it is even just like sort of a residual GDC effect, in that like I have like this sort of confidence and drive in my life and my identity that didn't quite exist before. And wow, I've rambled for a very long time talking about this, but yeah, I've had an interesting couple weeks.
I think you've rambled for almost the right amount of time to just showcase how important it was.
Yeah, that's fair. Why almost?
Where's the discrepancy? I don't know if you're done.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it's really, really lovely getting to hear about you stepping into who you feel you are and without pretending. Right. And seeing the effects of that, and that you were in a place that could be supportive of that, because I know not all places can be or will be.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I know I have friends who are trans and whose families did not react as well as I did. Like, I have a friend who, you know, was disowned by her father, and I was worried like, well, maybe that's where I'm headed, but evidently not. And I feel very fortunate to be where I am, and also just way more fulfilled on a deeper level that I can be who I am and be recognized and still loved, and just yeah, and like seen on my own terms and appreciated. And that is just an incredible feeling, I think, for anybody, like not just for trans people. It's just it, you know, when it's a gender thing, it can be especially poignant due to how much how much like impetus there is to cover it up throughout your life. But yeah
when our external world accepts us, it's one way that we can realize that we can accept ourselves, and that is truly amazing.
Yeah so wow, it's been a couple weeks. I didn't even talk about the time before that, because like the couple weeks before that weren't nearly as eventful. Like it was mostly just schoolwork and stress about GDC.
Yeah.
And then GDC happened and was the best thing ever. So
right. Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see what happens next.
Yeah, me neither. It's got me stoked to like do more work on Hunted and get it out, and also work on some other projects. I'll probably talk about that in Dev Thoughts, because we've got to have something to talk about in Dev Thoughts. But in the meantime, let's hear your Dev Thoughts.
Okay. Better now.
Dev Thoughts.
All right. So I've been working on Rainbow Bobo, of course. And my dev thoughts are somewhat limited in the fact that my body is somewhat limited, right? So I can't put as much work into this as I could to my games last semester. And that's been a bit of a struggle for me because I can feel what I need to do to take it to amazing, and I'm not going to have the time. And so just yesterday any time that feeling came up, I said, yes, I see you. It's more important that I heal right now. I'm going to take whatever hit that comes with that. I'm not doing this for the grade, so I don't mind the grade hit. I'm just doing this because I really care about this project. And that intrinsic component allows me to finish it at a later time, and that's fine. That's dandy. I can let my body heal. So anytime that comes up, I'm just reminding myself I can do this later when my body is capable.
And I think that's a good reminder for everybody in general. I know, at least especially in our industry, there's this like, because there's so much passion in it, there's this drive to work on everything until like the wee hours of the night and not sleep and just destroy your body for your art. And well, of course, like that also feeds into like the societal trope of like real art comes through pain. So you must like put yourself through hell to do this.
Right.
But yeah, I think that's like a really good reminder. It's just remembering like it will still be here. I can take my time and I will get it done. I know I will get it done, and it's okay to take the time to do that.
Yeah. Yep. Very much like that.
Yeah.
So for this game, what have I done lately? I did a bunch of tweaking to particles and movement things and the camera system, and I've created 2 out of the 7 or 8 levels I need to make. I think it'll take me about, at this point, one of the things that was really challenging was I had to build all of the components for this game before I could put things together. I believe I have all those components built now, so I believe I could whip out a level in about an hour with all the components that I built. It won't be good, it won't be polished, but I can have it like set in an hour.
Yeah,
which means
that's good.
And I think I've got 5 levels left, so I need roughly 5 hours more time to put the levels together. But then of course I have to do some sound work, some particle work, and these will probably just be temporary things. And then I'll have about 3 weeks for polish. We'll see what happens. I don't expect to be able to take it to where I know it can go. But I get it part of the way there.
Yeah.
It's better to leave it on a part where I can continue easily to take it where I think it should go, where I think it can go.
Yeah, agreed.
And then I can use it as a portfolio piece, which is delightful.
Yeah, that is great. Gosh, yeah. I was realizing when I was updating my portfolio for like, for before going to GDC, because I had like a link to it on my business cards that I was handing out to folks. I was like, oh shoot, I feel like I've done more in these last like this last year since I've updated my portfolio than I realized. Like I have more to show for Hunted. I've got a Game Jam game to show. I've got this podcast to throw on there because like, dang,
all right.
Okay. Like it's one of those things where like, at least I feel like I constantly feel like I'm not doing enough. And then when I step back and look at everything I've done, I'm like, oh, that is kind of impressive. but yeah.
Yes, look at all this stuff I've done. Huh, when did that happen?
Right. It's another thing that like helps remind you that like you're working enough, you know? Like you don't have to like keep being more and more and more.
It's really funny the way that we tell ourselves all sorts of things, often subconsciously, like, I need to be this, I need to be this, I need to be this. And it's just not true. We're already ourselves. We just don't realize that. And we don't act like that because we don't realize that. It's ridiculous because it screws up our life. But we're all human. We all do it. It's really amazing when we stop.
Oh, yeah. Well, like that was what my whole GDC thing was about. So yeah, definitely.
Right.
I know. Like I get that. Like it's all, I feel like for everybody to some extent, like people are often concerned about like burying themselves under some level of artificiality, you know, just because of what's ever underneath is like something that they don't feel like is respectable enough or that they're afraid what others will think. And so,
or they're afraid
of
not being loved or whatever your personal reason is.
Right. And so that, it becomes this really strong incentive to just sort of like paper over yourself with some, you know, some more marketable version of yourself, like in as many aspects of your life as you can. And yeah, like letting go of that is the most freeing thing imaginable for me. So
yeah, because you're not imprisoning yourself.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah. Yeah,
just
easy.
Stop.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's easier. It's easier said than done. And of course, like some often,
yeah,
like,
that was the joke.
You know, yeah, yeah. And we'll find ourselves in environments where sometimes it's necessary for safety or to keep a job that pays the bills or something like that. Like sometimes it can be necessary. But I think it's also like it's necessary for fulfillment. To be able to sort of like to live truthfully where you can. And yeah. Okay. Yeah. 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 That's it.
One of the questions that I constantly ask myself is what's more important, truth or whatever feels more comfortable in this situation. And sometimes I go with comfortable and every time that I do that, I feel awful.
Yeah.
I just, like when I need to say something that I don't say, it always feels awful for me. And that's the price I pay anytime that I do something that isn't truthful to what I am.
Yeah, and, no, I definitely get that. But I also don't want to like discount the fact that, you know, in some situations for some people, like it's necessary to, cover up a certain bit of your truth. Like I think like an easy scenario to point to is like, imagine, some like teenager who's like, who's queer in some way, who's like gay or bi or a lesbian or trans or, you know, any identity that isn't like cisgender and straight, and like if they're living in a situation like perhaps with their parents where coming out would endanger their life, like sometimes you have to, and that's horrible. And I feel like to me, like that's another reason to sort of like be an activist for things that enable people to live more truthfully, because it is a horrible feeling and it sort of like eats away at you on like a soul level. And so because while there are places where it's necessary right now, I would like to imagine a world where there aren't, and to work for that world, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And a tricky thing, because of course we all have our own subconscious biases and things and our fears of letting go.
Yeah.
We have our work cut out for us.
Yeah, we certainly do. Lord knows we do in so many ways.
The back on Dev Thoughts for a second here.
Yeah.
the other project I did a bunch of work on was, what's it called? It's the UI design for a non-existent game called Chain of Jewels. And it's we're working on a 4-person team, which is really fun. And I got to be the producer, which was also really fun. And I really enjoyed this project working with my team. I was very fortunate to be put with a bunch of, one, skilled people, and two, people who would go beyond just the like, yeah, it's fine. These are people that cared very much about the work we were doing. And I made sure to offer them praise where I could, to keep them focused on the things that mattered, and to offer design tweaks and what have you. And one of the things I really liked about this project in my current condition is that I was often so busy just making sure everyone was doing the right thing and giving feedback where I could, that I often didn't have to touch a computer. So my arms could just rest up until about near the end of the project. I did do some stuff to make sure we finished on time. But yeah, I've been enjoying that project. And it's also interesting because I've never had to do UI design before. And we're of course given this whole process where we start with what's called a persona, which is essentially your target audience personified as one person that is very detailed in the things they like, the things they don't like, why they play this game. And you tailor the entire experience to that person so that mm-hmm. you know who you're designing for. And anytime you're debating something with your team, you could just fall back on that and be like, okay, here's what the person we're building for would think about this most likely. And then we use that to make our decisions. It's the same way I'm building Rainbow Bobo, although a little bit less intensely.
So to clarify, you only use one persona in this design project?
Use three.
Okay, because I was going to say, usually, at least I've always heard, like, and we talked about this in my user interface design class, usually we use multiple to kind right. of, you know, design for a wider appeal than one person, but...
right, yeah. So we're using three. In Rainbow Bobo, I'm using two. I think you've talked about those personas on this experience. Say again?
Yeah, you're right. I was going to say, I think, yeah, you've talked about both of them on the podcast, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So that was delightful. We just turned that in, so we're done. It was also really fun because we're targeting iPhone 10, and the program that we were using actually let us boot it up in my iPhone, which is an iPhone 10, so we could actually see what the interface would look like on the screen. That was just so fun. One highlight from that project on my end was when the last screen that we built was the victory screen. And as I was building that, I originally was like, okay, what does a similar game Marvel Battle Lines do when you win? And then I was like, I don't want to draw from games as an inspiration. I want to teach myself how to draw from things that aren't games. And so I looked at our pillars, I looked at our personas, and I said, I'm drawing from manga instead. Okay. So then I went and looked up pictures of just manga comic panels and looked at some of the effects that they use. And one of them that I see a lot in JoJo too is just these black action lines that emanate from sort of a circular center. And it's just like, it's like, that's pretty cool.
I know exactly the trope you're talking about.
Exactly. So I took that and I just started drawing lines on the screen as my teammate was working on the victory page. And he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, just hold off. Just give me a moment. I want to see something. He's like, okay. And then over our Discord channel, someone who's working remotely says, what is Milo doing? And my teammate replies, he said it's going to be good. And I looked at him like, I didn't say it was going to be good. I just want to try it. So I'm just drawing line after line after line after line after line and varying their thickness so that it creates that same effect. I drew like, I don't know, 20 and then just duplicated that and rotated it slightly. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty good. Of course, you can't see anything in the middle because you need some sort of a cutout. And at this point, one of my teammates caught on with what I was going for, and they just threw on like a white, roughly star-shaped thing, but it was from like a manga comic panel. And so what it did is created this effect of like a cutout, but it wasn't a nice circle like the comic I was using as reference had. It was like this jagged star-shaped thing that gave it even more sense of action. And then we had like when you're fighting the bad guy, you slash the bad guy, and then the bad guy dies in a puddle at the top of the screen, and then all the screen except the bad guy gets wiped out and replaced with these crazy action lines, and it says victory, and then shows all your rewards and stuff. It looked super slick.
Yeah, that sounds really cool.
Right? So that was my favorite part. I didn't do a whole lot of design on this one. Or I did a lot of design consultation, but a very little implementation. It was fun to do that one bit and actually have it work and have a teammate that was excellent enough to synergize with that. That was awesome.
So how do you like the production role as compared to, you know, your more hands-on design roles that you've had in the past?
Right. Well, I've had experience doing production before on two game jams. And so
But of course, game jams are kind of, they exist in a pocket dimension apart from reality, so.
Sure. Though one of them was a 2-week game jam, right? So I could.
Oh, right.
that was actually enough time to get some feeling for what that actually feels and works like. So I feel right at home, and I've got a lot of experience working with teams and coordinating teams. It's just, I enjoy the role. My preferred role is creative direction, Which I kind of was doing on this as well. So,
yeah,
right. It's like figuring out how the design is going to match our personas. Like one of the things we did was our personas really, really like, they like getting in and out very quickly. And our game is a lot to do with collection and building your loadouts and using that to win and what have you. So one of the things that became very important was letting them get to those things as fast as possible. And one of the things I drew from inspiration this time was actually Marvel Battle Lines. They've got this ever-present menu at the bottom of the screen, which I really like. But when you try and jump between screens, it's just awful because you'll be in like editing one of your loadouts and then you'll be like, okay, what was this person in competitive using? And then you jump back there and then you've got to hit a couple of buttons to actually get back to the thing you were looking at. And like, oh, okay, that's what it was. And then you go back to your card layout and suddenly it's all reset and you're like, ah. So the way that we designed it was that we had that same menu that lets you jump in and out really quickly and get to the things that matter, like in one or two taps, but they stay that way when you swap between them. So if I'm looking at someone else's build, I can just hit back to my build and it's right there where I left it and then tweak something and then go back to what they did and then say, oh, okay, that's the next thing. And then jump back so that people can really get in there, do what they want as quickly as possible and focus on the things that are interesting to them. That was one of the things that I was helping with the menu design. And I really enjoy that creative direction role, right? Making sure everyone is focused and everything feels like it belongs in the same world.
All right. Yeah, that's cool. I don't know. That sounds like fun. I mean, maybe not like, Yeah, I feel like I probably wouldn't enjoy the role quite as much just because I really like getting like my hands deep and dirty with the designs and programming and stuff, but it does sound fun.
Mm-hmm. How about you? I've chatted for a while now. What's tell me about your development stuff.
Right. I mean, where was I going to go with this? So kind of like post GDC, I am left with a lot of motivation and inspiration that wasn't super there before. And I think also like one thing that I want to talk about is maybe this could have fit in the catch up, but whatever. We're in dev thoughts now. It's a dev thought. one thing I want to talk about that feels like I've kind of had almost some like paradigm shifts personally as a result of GDC. And one of those is, I'm sure you remember Milo on the podcast, me talking about how sort of like worried I am about like the trajectory our environment is taking currently and wondering what I can do about that and being skeptical of if I can do anything with games for that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure I found an answer to that question at GDC, but I feel like what I did find is that I care so deeply about making games, and it is such a core part of what I want to do with my life that I don't think I can do anything else. Like, and so it's like, shoot. Okay. So like, it's almost like I've done this and I'm like, every part of me is screaming out to make video games. I need to make video games. And so like now I'm kind of wondering, okay, so I'm definitely going to make games. That's unavoidable. Like that's an inevitability right now in my life. how can I make games that, sort of like support a more sustainable world in the way that I want to? And so I'm still kicking that can around in my brain. Like I've had some ideas for maybe like some AR games that like that would be able to sort of show you the effect of climate change on like real world things, like by kind of like using your phone as sort of like a portal you look through to like see what happens to this landscape in the future. That could be very interesting. That would also take a lot of work, I think. But things like that, maybe some kind of like sort of like MMO type game in your phone on augmented, like Google Maps or something that's all about like going and doing like little acts of kindness for the environment as like quests or something. Yeah. As you can tell, like augmented reality and real world gaming is a recurring theme in here. That's because that's something I personally deeply feel like has a lot of potential. I know I've touched on that a little bit in this podcast before, like the potential I feel like is in augmented reality, but there's a lot there that I would love to work with. And so I don't know, or maybe even something as simple as making a game and donating a portion of the proceeds to, you know, some kind of like sustainability advocacy group, things like that. But, or even just, you know, doing activism in my personal life while I do games for business, you know, something like that. But trying to figure out a way to have both of those things in my life is, I think, going to be a challenge for me, but an interesting and hopefully a fulfilling one, and one that I know I'm going to have to take, given that, like, for me, it's like an unstoppable force and an immovable object, you know, like, like the environment issue is like the unstoppable force that I'm like, I know I have to do something about that. And like my passion for games is the immovable object that like, this is not going to go away no matter what. So I'm like, I need to reconcile them somehow.
It's really interesting to hear you talk about this, and especially following up on a previous episode where I think you even mentioned, it's like, people I think would often tell me I need to find a way to combine those, but that just feels like not right to me. And now to see that after GDC, you're feeling the opposite, like, yes, this is what I'm going to do.
Well, and it's less like, my concern before was, I don't know if I will do my most effective work by finding some way to combine them. And GDC hasn't reassured me that I can still do my most effective work, but it has made me very confident that I can't do anything else that isn't games while not being like, without being like woefully unfulfilled and probably ineffective as a result. So basically it's like, you know, it's more like clarified the rules I am working with that like, yeah, no, there's no way for me to avoid games. I need to figure out a way to reconcile them. It hasn't given me a way. It's just told me that I need to find a way.
Yeah, exactly. Great.
Yeah. And so that's been on my mind recently as far as dev thoughts have gone. I also, I really want to get back into Hunted. I feel like I have, to be completely honest, like spent a lot of time this week like working on stuff in my personal life. Like, you know, I mentioned like the whole dealing with my family and coming out and all of that, as well as like a bunch of other interpersonal stuff between friends and other like loose ends in my life that I'm trying to sort of like tie up, like errands I should have done a while ago, things like that. But I am very excited and still quite motivated to get back into work on Hunted. And, you know, like I'm just excited to like polish it up and make it a good game that like people like are able to enjoy and just have it out there, you know? And just be, you know, have it out there is something that I'm proud of. And I don't know, I'm excited to start to work on that yet, even though I haven't quite, just because I have spent more time on other things this week. And to wrap up my dev thoughts, I've also spent some time on Tetris, which brings us into the next section.
Been it now!
Gamer thoughts. Let's talk about
Tetris.
Tell us
about Tetris, and I'll chat about Tetris too.
I've talked for a while, but I guess I can keep talking. Let me take a drink of water first. My mouth's dry.
Not allowed. You must be parched. Don't you know that's the only way you win Tetris?
Yeah. Shoot.
You ever wonder why you only come in fifth? It's because you drink water.
Exactly. I haven't deprived myself. Or better yet, it's because I drink water instead of Mountain Dew gamer fuel.
That's right. Isn't that more for shooters, though?
I think it's whatever you want it to be, as long as you're an epic gamer, my dude. But yeah, so anyway, Tetris 99. I know I talked about earlier about the wall I usually get to in competitive games where I feel like I am not as good as I want to be, and the amount of work it would take me to get better seems not worth it when I could be doing other things and I'm not enjoying the game as much as I would like to be enjoying it. It's like a common phenomenon for me whenever I try to play competitive games, but it's not happening in Tetris. Like, I am legitimately, I can see myself getting better. I can feel myself getting better. And I am enjoying, like, every bit of the process. Like, I am just, like, enjoying it thoroughly. And I'm not totally sure why that's happening, but it is happening. And so it's led to me playing a lot of Tetris recently. Like, I'll just be trying to do something, and I just can't stop thinking of, like, new stacking strategies I want to try out in Tetris 99 to pull off, like, better and more combos. And then I'm like, ah, screw it. I've got to go play a quick game, because the games are so quick. They're, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah. And it's, I was going to say, I think that's probably one of the reasons why that you don't burn out on that one, is that it just takes, like, I don't know, a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, right, whatever. It's super quick to get in, to get out, to move on.
Right. It just, like, slips into the cracks of my life so easily versus something like Super Smash Brothers or like Fortnite or Overwatch has always felt like it has to be an investment, you know? Like, yeah, I have to like make a hobby out of it, versus Tetris is like more akin to like browsing social media, where like I have 2 minutes, I have like 5 minutes before I need to leave the house. Let me play a game of Tetris, you know?
And so I actually want to touch on the design of that a little bit and compare Tetris to Smash Bros. Because if you look at that, there, as far as like quick playtime goes, they're actually pretty similar.
Right.
And the thing that you're describing is that you are investing time into Tetris. But I think the critical difference is that if you want to get good at Smash Bros., it has an insane amount of depth. Not to say Tetris doesn't, and I'll touch on that in a second, but there's like, what, 90 bajillion different characters, and you have to learn their moves, you have to learn their counters, you have to learn all the crazy like ledge defense stuff and mind reading your opponent and what have you. Tetris 99 and Tetris in general is, there's deep strategies to it, but it's very simple, right? You just focus on what you're doing. In general, in Tetris 99, though, you can manually select targeting, and if you want to get really good, you'll get good at multitasking. But
yeah,
and there's like different strategies for placement and what have you. But compare that to like, I need to learn this one game that all my opponents are playing, and most of the time I just focus on doing well on my end, versus Smash Bros, where I have to learn that times 90, right? So and there's more that you have to look into, I would say, per character in Smash Bros. Than you do for just Tetris, or an equal amount, or maybe just slightly more. But again, it's that multiplicative value that is so important that makes Tetris, I think, a little more accessible, which therefore makes a mastery feel it's easier to attain, I
right.
think.
Well, and like to add on to that more, Smash like requires more outside investment that isn't just playing Smash to get good at it. Like, you've got to read about your characters, like you kind of touched on this. You've got to like learn all their movesets. Like, you've got to spend time analyzing frame data if you want to get really good. And then you've got to train. Like, people recommend entering training mode and just not actually playing games of Smash, but just like practicing combos against like just immobile characters, like practicing certain moves, things like that. And so like, versus the way to get better at Tetris 99 is to just play more games of Tetris 99. And so, the act of getting better is in itself more inherently enjoyable. It feels like less of a grind and less of an investment.
Yeah, I would wager that depends on who you are as a person. But for you, yes, I would agree wholeheartedly that that's more like, for me in Overwatch, I love doing my research. I love figuring out all the little details of these characters and their interactions. That's very motivating for me as a person. Obviously not for everyone.
Right. And to be honest, I'm a little bit mischaracterizing Tetris here, because there's obviously some stuff to learn about it, like how to pull off T-spins, different opportunities for that. Different people have like different sort of stacking and comboing techniques that you can see and be like, I want to try that. But it doesn't feel nearly as necessary as it does in Smash to sort of like spend outside time researching.
And I also think it depends on who you're playing with too, right? Like with Tetris 99, I don't think there's like a competitive crowd, but if you get into the competitive crowd of Smash, like, it gets messy.
Well, yeah, and part of that I think just comes down to Battle Royale design. you know?
Yeah.
In that, like, instead of, you know, repeatedly being matchmade with, like, people who are on your level, I read a whole, like, there was a really good, I think it was, like, a Polygon article about this, about, like, the way that skill caps work in traditional competitive games like Overwatch or League of Legends versus how they work in Battle Royale games like Fortnite or Tetris 99. In that, because matchmaking is entirely random in Tetris, and because there are, you know, 98 other people you're playing against at all times, that, like, you can much more easily see the result of you getting better reflected, like, yeah, in your world. Like, you play better compared to other people the better you get at Tetris, because you'll just be placing higher in the 99 ranked people that are just randomly chosen. So, right, like, the skill of the lobby itself is not going to increase as you get better, in a way that is not true in, like, a ranked competitive game like Overwatch or League of Legends.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, like, for me, that leads to more inherent satisfaction that, like, I can definitely see my improvement at the game reflected as I, like, move up the ranks in, like, every match and, like, consistently place higher.
Yeah, that time to feedback is much quicker than in something like Overwatch, where, like, if you want to go increase your stuff on the ladder, they call it, in competitive mode, you put in a lot of work, and it doesn't pay off immediately because you're gonna lose games even if you're really good. Like, mm-hmm, we played against a sniper that was clearly above our level. This is just, like, their accuracy was insane. They were not from bronze. However, we played better than they did. It was like we had better, yeah, positioning and we won. So it's like, even when you're the best, you still lose. So it's fascinating to just see that, like, that time to feedback gives you more of those dopamine hits of, ah, yeah, I did really good that round. And Tetris 99 makes it so easy to just, like, jump in again. And as we, right, mentioned earlier, you get it done in 5 minutes, maybe even less.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's whereas, 5 minutes if you stay in the game for a respectable amount of time. If, you know, if, like me, you mess up sometimes and just, like, completely throw the game, then, right, it's like 2 minutes. But
right, right. And of course, no one else cares if you throw the game, because, great, one less person for us to worry about.
Right, right. People don't get angry at you for it because it's individual.
But, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so that's a cool thing. But
and then final bit about Overwatch that I don't think I actually finished there is that ranking up with taking into losses into account is you're going to have this sort of seesaw thing where it's going to take many games to actually rank out, up and out. Even if you're really good, like, it's going to take like 10 at least to get out of that rank and onto the next one. So that because of the way that the ranking system works, right? Because you've got to get the wins, the losses subtract points, so you've got to deal with those. But if you know, if you have like a 60% win rate, then you're eventually going to get that, like, ah, yeah, I've moved up the rank, I am better now. The game, mm-hmm, will finally tell you that.
Yeah, but you, like you said, it takes some time to get there.
Yeah. I see that. Nice.
Another thing I want to touch on. So we've largely talked about Tetris compared to, you know, what we're calling traditional competitive games. I want to talk about Tetris compared to other Battle Royale games and why, like, I'm enjoying it so much more than I'm just so much more hooked than I was by, like, Fortnite or Apex Legends. And I think that is because of just the pacing of a round of Tetris is way more, it's way different than the pacing of a round of, like, Fortnite. Because, and, like, the amount of time you can spend getting better at Tetris per match is, like, exponentially higher than the amount of time per match you can spend getting better at, like, Fortnite's mechanics. So, for instance, like, you know, the structure of, like, Apex or Fortnite is that you spend a lot of time going and gathering components and loot and stuff, and then eventually you get into a firefight. And if, like, your shooting mechanics, or in Fortnite, if your building mechanics aren't very good, you're probably going to lose that firefight. And you have about, like 15 to 30 seconds inside that firefight to work on your mechanics before you'll lose and you have to get another match. And then you have to spend like 5-10 minutes building up to the next firefight. And so the amount of time you can spend just, you know, training at like some of the basic mechanics of the game is often quite limited, which in my opinion makes Fortnite or Apex Legends or Battle Royale shooters in general kind of bad introductory shooter games, unless you're like already good at shooters. Mm-hmm. And so Tetris 99 is different because the entire game, you're still just playing Tetris. You're still playing the same way as before. Yeah, things get a little faster, or you might try to like, you know, focus a little more as like you get targeted by like people who are sending you a lot of garbage. But like the entire game, you can just focus on straight up Tetris mechanics. So because basically 100% of the game is spent on, you know, practicing skills that you need to get better at the game, it allows me to feel like I'm getting better way faster. And it's just way less frustrating because it's not like there's all this buildup for nothing. Like there often is when I play like Fortnite, when there's all this buildup of gathering materials only for me to get shot down immediately because I'm not good at shooting.
Yeah. And this is a fascinating difference too. And as we've mentioned, target audience, where Tetris, I don't know specifically who they're aiming at, but I'm assuming people who play Tetris, right? One of the, like, my family's bathroom in our house is labeled Tetris room. So that should give you some idea of my family's relationship with Tetris.
That's great.
But it's really cool that Tetris 99 exists because it does something that the original Tetris can't, which is it gives you the satisfaction of I beat you because I am better than you. Right?
Yeah.
That is a really satisfying experience that the original Tetris can kind of have, like leaderboards, but it's not that immediate, like, ha, you're out of the game and I'm not. So It still appeals to those same people and perhaps other people who haven't played Tetris. And even if they suck, they can get better quicker because, as you mentioned, the rounds are so short and you're just practicing so quick it's the same game that we love with some extra dash of a new engagement type.
Right.
It's really cool.
Right. And it's still got those same old engagement types. I guess the only difference, the main difference is that it doesn't have scorekeeping. So like you can't like be like, oh yeah, look at me, I got a high score. But you can still be like, oh yeah, look at me, I got an amazing combo, you know?
Right. Or oh yeah, look at me, I beat 97 other people in this game.
Yeah. And then that's the whole new aspect of it. That's in satisfies on a whole different level, a whole different part of the lizard brain.
Yes. Yeah. Different kind of competition. I've also been, wait, did you have more you wanted to say before I jump into my Tetris thoughts?
No, I want to hear what you thought. And I guess I'll just end it by saying I am really, really loving this game.
Yeah. It's good stuff. My friends actually, I knew it existed. I knew I needed to play it at some point, but one of my friends came over winter break and they brought
spring
it as
break?
Well as Splatoon. Yes. Spring break.
Okay.
Thank you. I always call it winter break. It's so funny.
It's funny. Yeah.
Anyways, they brought over their Switch and they brought Tetris 99 as well as Splatoon 2, which I'll probably talk a little bit about if we have time. But they brought over Tetris 99 and I was watching it and I'm like, oh, this is really cool. So I went and got it on my brother's Switch because I didn't bring my Switch because I have tendonitis and I thought I can't play games, which in general I can't.
But you did anyway.
I did, yes. But I modified the way that I hold the controller, so it was mostly okay. I did manage to hurt my left thumb, though, so not doing that again. Again, I've only played this game for 4 hours, but I loved it. So I installed it on my brother's Switch and started playing it alongside my friend, and we would start the match at the same time so that we would get a higher likelihood of getting paired in the same game. And then our other friend would look at the screen and confirm whether or not we were actually in the same game. And we were about 80% of the time, which was really fun.
Yeah, that is fun.
But the major thing that drove me on that was that competitive engagement is like, ha, I am better than you. And that sense of improvement as I climbed up the ranks. And when you don't, when you get eliminated at like number 80 for whatever reason, because everyone's targeting you or what have you, it's fascinating because the, as we've mentioned, the rounds are so small that it's like, yep, that sucked. I sucked there. That's okay. Start. And then in 30 seconds, you're in another one.
You'll be like, right. Immediately you'll be like, all right, going to redeem myself in 30 seconds here. Like
yeah,
so quick.
Yeah. And one of the benefits this game has over Overwatch, as far as the matchmaking experience goes, is that when you're playing this game, you only have to worry about yourself to win. And so you get this really visceral feedback of like, oh, yes, I am better because I am the only reason I won. It's like, it's because I am better than you, which is, it has value as a competitive game. Whereas in Overwatch, you have five other humans that you have to coordinate. Now, I don't want to say that that makes Tetris a better game. It just means that Overwatch is targeting something else, right? They want to create that fellowship of teamwork, of coordinating with a team that works really well at like high levels of competitive sports, like football, right? Is these people that mind share can do amazing things. However, it makes it difficult to balance for a casual audience when you're working with a bunch of teammates who feel they can't trust each other because they've been burned in one or two or 700 matches. And so everyone just starts to not work together and it can fall apart, get really messy. But when you do get a game where people cooperate, it's incredible. The experience is absolutely amazing for people who want that. And some people don't want that.
Mm-hmm. But is that all you've got?
Yep.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So Tetris is a really good game. If you've got a Switch, it's free. Why are you not playing it? Please do. It's amazing. But yeah. I don't have anything more to say about it. I already said.
I'll chat briefly about Splatoon 2 then.
Yeah. Let's hear.
So this is a game I actually want to play more of when I'm healed. I really, really like the design of Splatoon, which of course doesn't surprise me. It's a Nintendo game. Just the casual mode where you go and you paint the way that you win is by getting more paint on more areas than your opposing team. And the way that you win, of course, then is to just paint everything. And everyone in this game has paint guns or like paint rollers, and you just splash everything in paint. The way that you eliminate each other is by covering each other in paint. And you're these little squid creatures that can duck in and out of paint. It's crazy. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I really enjoy about the casual mode is that whoever wins is the person with more paint on the ground, right? Which means that the emphasis is on putting paint on the ground, which means that even if you are a lower skill than, say, someone who's got really great shooter mechanics, you can still win. You can still win this game because it supports different player types too. Like the people who want to go out and destroy you by shooting you can go do that, and there will be an asset to the team. And the people that just want to go and make everything colored in paint and have a good time getting the satisfaction of, haha, look at all this paint I put everywhere, can go do that and be beneficial to the team, and both can have a good time. So it's a really interesting way of balancing for skill. And as I was watching the casual mode, 9 times out of 10, the games are super close. It's like within 5 to 10% of each other of like map covered, which is just amazing balance. So they've done an incredible job setting up core mechanics that work super well for a casual gaming experience. That said, they also have a ranked mode, which was really fascinating to me because that mode that I was just talking about in casual, where you put paint all over everything, doesn't show up in ranked mode, which is brilliant. Really? It is a brilliant decision. All of the game modes in ranked require some degree of team coordination, require some degree of shooter mechanics, because the goals all force the entire team to congregate in certain areas, whether it's King of the Hill or their weird take on football, or there's like a bajillion different game modes. I can't remember them all, but they all force people into like, here's a part of the map that you all need to be. If you're going to win, you need to be here, and you need the other team to not be here, which means you need to eliminate them. So instantly the game shifts from this more casual experience where everyone can feel good and the matches are super close to, if you're not as good as the other team, you're going to lose.
Yeah. And it sounds really also smart. Just way more cooperation focused versus, like, I'm sure in the other mode, the casual mode, it's easier to just be off in your own corner doing your own thing versus it sounds like in all of the competitive modes, like, you have to be team focused.
Yeah, absolutely. They are also, oh, there was one other point that I can't remember now. So I guess we'll just move on. Never mind. I love Splatoon 2. I think it's brilliantly designed. I love the way that they shift between casual and competitive. It's really cool.
Yeah, I have the game. I bought it on sale months ago, like during the Christmas sale, I think. And I've yet to even boot it up. I really need to.
Yeah. Do yourself a favor. I don't think you'll like it as much as Tetris 99, but definitely play it.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm sure I'll enjoy it, but yeah, it's no Tetris. Tetris is my baby.
Yes, just as Overwatch is my baby. I love that game. Oh, and Halo's coming to PC. I'm so excited.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually kind of excited about that, too. Like, Forge on PC just sounds like generally a really good experience, so...
Right.
I'm excited for that.
Forge actually is already on PC. You can get Halo 5 Forge, which is the entire Halo 5 Forge suite for PC. You just can't do like matchmaking or anything like that.
Oh, well, like not being able to play in it sounds kind of like it defeats the purpose, though. Oh,
you can play in it with custom lobbies, so you need a bunch of other people and you need to organize it.
Oh, okay. I got
that. Yeah. But I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah. Like, and just, I don't know. I'm also just excited to see like the boost to graphical fidelity with, you know, just being able to run it on PC. I think that could be interesting.
I wonder how much they'll do. I've just signed up for the flighting program for Reach, which will be the first one to come up in the hopes
flighting
that...
Flighting their beta?
Yes. Yeah. Sorry.
Okay.
And in the hopes that I'll be healed enough to actually play a game at that point, because I'd really love to do that. And I feel a little bit torn because it's like, I know, like everyone in Overwatch has had a lot of time to get really good. So it's a lot more challenging to rank up in that game because people have had more time. I mean, it's been out for 3 years to get good at the game, to understand the game. Mm-hmm. Whereas something like Halo, I mean, yes, it's been out before, but on console, and console and PC players are not the same, which means that if I started putting most of my time into that, I could rank up quicker.
Yeah. Well, and just like the way you play an FPS on PC is different. So I feel like even people who are bringing over their console experience, they're going to have a different time.
Yeah. And for really high level players, I've heard that it's not actually that different. Like the biggest thing to get used to is the aim, right? Which is very important.
Right.
But like good positioning is still good positioning.
That's true. So yeah, the strategy will be the same, but
for high level players, I don't know that matters for normal people.
Yeah. Yeah. For the other 99.99%.
Right. Yeah. Good stuff. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Hopefully your hands aren't broken. Fingers crossed. When is it?
Yeah.
I'm coming out.
I'm going to really enforce 4 hours a day as best I can to heal because I want to heal.
Yeah. So when's the beta coming out for you?
They haven't announced it yet, but you can go sign up for it if you look for, I don't know, Reach beta signups, Reach flighting program.
Okay.
You sign up for their preview, Halo preview program or their Halo Insider program. I can't remember what it's called. And it's one of the things that you can request access for. And I don't know when it comes out. They've said that they're going to test Reach on the Xbox at least once, probably twice, before they even have it up and running on PC. And that's, of course, because they've got to get all of the crazy settings that PC players expect on there working before they throw it on there.
Do you have any idea if they have announced if like it'll be like cross buy with the Xbox One Master Chief Collection? Because I'm curious, given that I own the Master Chief Collection, do I have to buy it again?
I haven't heard anything of that. My guess is no.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair, but it still makes me sad.
I think that's all we got.
Yeah, we have gamered our thoughts out. We're ready to...
Whoa!
Yeah, we're ready to wrap it up with community, right?
Yes, we are. It's been so good to finally catch up after weeks and weeks.
Right. And like such an eventful time for us both, even though your events are maybe a little bit sad. And I hope your hands will be okay.
Thank you. Me too.
Yeah. So yeah, our email is atale2gamedevs@gmail.com. No spaces, special characters, or capital letters. Send your thoughts, reviews, suggestions, or just whatever you'd like us to hear to that email inbox. If you're so inclined, we would love to hear from you to either, you know, make any improvements to our podcast or just to interact with you as a human being, because we'd love to hear from other people who like games and game development. Additionally, our Twitter handle is @2gamedevs. That's where we'll be posting like episode updates when episodes come out. If Milo's hands ever do get better, someday we're going to stream Fallout 76. We've promised you this much. But at this point, it may take quite a while. So we'll see. Don't expect it too soon.
I would like to be better by like midsummer at least. You know, it'd be great if I got better in the next month. That would be awesome.
Right.
I think that my healing process is going to accelerate now that I'm seeing the chiropractor, as I mentioned. There's just like some other stuff that happened months ago that is built up over months and months that has now created quite a mess for my body. So as we unwind that, I think I'll start to heal faster. And I'm young, which helps.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, that definitely helps as well. Well, you know what? I'll make sure to say a short prayer to Todd Howard so that you can be blessed by Fallout 76 soon.
But yes, good.
aside from that, I don't know if there's anything else to say, is there?
Just our outro.
Okay, well then let's say it. All right, listeners. This has been A Tale of Two Game Devs, a podcast about two friends who aren't video game industry veterans,
but want to be.
We'll catch you next time, hopefully next week.